Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with the News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. I'm joined, as always, by the Managing Editor, Andrea Lopez Villafana. What's up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
You guys missed me, reporter Jacob McQuinney.
Hey there.
You posted that you didn't miss me, that
you
the show
so
was fine.
You were so confident that we missed you.
Yeah, you posted that you didn't miss me, but I felt that you did.
We did.
But it was a great show without me. I am back, though, and you have to deal with that.
Well, it was very interesting seeing Andrea sitting in the seat that you usually sit in. She started to like...
I think there's
like a spiritual, you know, aura that remains there from all of the times that you've sat there.
I can't remember what I did.
I think there was some scolding going on.
Several moments.
I think there was some shortness, and then just the overall degree of being like large and in charge, you know?
You felt it?
Yeah.
Oh, good. You scolded? I don't scold.
Oh.
I was just like, okay, let's get started. Stop goofing off.
Yeah. That's what it was.
Coming up on the show this week, it was a big week for things that used to be things. First up, the Republican Party of San Diego County used to be a thing. The one-time juggernaut said goodbye to its chairwoman after a battle over Carl DeMaio used to be a thing. DeMaio is running for assembly against fellow Republican Andrew Hayes. We'll go over the endorsement battle that left the party with new leadership. Next up in things that used to be a thing, virtual schools. Our data shows students in cloud schools are performing worse than what their situations may assume, and way worse than kids learning in person. Jacob crunched the numbers and has the full story. And finally, in things that used to be a thing, I've got the latest on an arena that will not be built on SDSU's land in Mission Valley. Used to be a thing. We've got all that and more. Stay with us. Well, I took last week off, but I did get to do a couple of interviews on the radio, and one of them was with Craig Elston at 97.3 The Fan, midday show with Annie and Elston. Loved talking to them. And Craig invited me. He's also the guy for the Sockers, the marketing and voice of the Sockers, the indoor soccer team. Soccer is the one where you kick.
I was like, is he making up a team name?
It really does sound like the silliest name. It's like,
I thought you were being silly.
No.
Silly hour.
No, so it's a team. They had their playoff game, and during the halftime, they have an annual.
This is real. Are you pranking me?
I saw a picture.
During the halftime, they have a media game, and I played in it almost every year. Mm-hmm. McKinsey played in it one year. Hmm. And I was with Frankie V. You know Frankie V from 93.3?
Okay.
He was on my team. I was referred to as the second most fit player on the team, which gives you an idea.
Second to Frankie?
Yeah, Frankie's got it. They said, you need to stay in the back and kick the ball out whenever it gets near you. Mm. What they didn't say is that they would not help me at all. And there were, because it was only 6-on-6, usually with these media games, like 10-on-10 or something. Mm. It was,
well, you know, that's
I was on stage
nowadays.
A lot. And there was a moment where the ball from the goalie of the other side was launched toward me, and it bounced in front of me. And I knew it was going to go high after it bounced, and that I had one option, which was to head it. And so I was ready. I'm like, I'm going to head this ball. Is that what the verb is, to head? It must be.
I would imagine so.
So I get ready. The ball bounces. It had a little more bounce than I might have anticipated. Mm-hmm. And as I went to head it, I completely missed it. And the whole crowd, there was a big crowd there. It was like a playoff game. They're like, ooh.
You can hear all of them.
Oh, man, you got like Charlie Browned by a soccer ball.
Yeah, but there was another moment just like that. Mm-hmm. I learned my lesson. I was back and I did head it. It did no good, but it did stop the forward progress for a little bit.
Wow.
Of the other team.
You know, I played soccer for 1 year as a kid.
We lost, by the way. Yeah. Frankie V and my team did not do well. Mm. But
I was not a good soccer player either.
Yeah.
You know, I the only bone I've ever broken was during a soccer game.
Really?
I broke my finger, which is pretty funny.
Wait, you don't even use your fingers.
Yeah, I wasn't very good at soccer.
We mentioned Mackenzie, and we want to remind all of you about one of our most popular newsletters, The Environment Report. Our disasters reporter, Mackenzie Elmer, has been writing that newsletter for years. It is fire. It covers a lot of earth and wind and water. Her most recent editions focus on a binational crisis of sewage, how many whales are buried in San Diego's trash, and how communities could have avoided major flood damage from the January storms. You can check these out for yourself and subscribe now at vosd.org/environment.
I love how you just sort of straightforward read the line, how many whales are buried in San Diego's trash?
That's how I can't hear myself.
That's good stuff. One of the interesting histories of San Diego politics is that the Republican Party, of course, of San Diego used to be a lot stronger. It used to be a thing. It used to be a big entity and institution, and the people involved in it, they used to raise a ton of money, support a lot of candidates. It also used to be the kind of hub of professional politics in San Diego. The building industry, the restaurants, the hotels, all of these groups donated lots of money. The candidates raised lots of money. They hired lots of consultants and professionals. There was a whole world of professionals who made their living from Republican politics in San Diego. Well, as Republican Party successes started to dwindle in numbers and eventually dry out almost completely in the city of San Diego in particular, there's no Republicans elected to office within the city of San Diego. There used to be quite a few. The mayor, the city attorney, the city council, we used to at least have half, all those kinds of things.
That's honestly quite impressive.
Yeah, it's been a massive shift. And in that shift, the professional class has largely left. There's a ton of consultants that left San Diego for places that Republican Party and conservative politics were more lucrative enterprises in different areas. And the professional class has largely shifted left. There's actually been some lobbyists and such who literally made the switch and are now more active on the left. The party, though, used to be a big deal. The Republican Party used to be led by Ron Nehring and went on to lead the California Republican Party. He travels the world talking about democracy now. Tony Krivorek used to be a very vocal and present conservative in San Diego, chair of the party, and was always on the news with whatever he was saying and the different decisions he was making about endorsements and all the things going on. And since then, of course, the party now has very little money, has very little power, very compared to at least the past. Mm-hmm. But it had a chairwoman, Paula Witzel, and she was, you know, kind of cruising along. The party had decided this last, you know, several months ago that it would support Andrew Hayes for the 75th Assembly District.
That's well, and when you say the party decided, who is the party?
So the party's made up of the Central Committee, right? Yeah. You get elected to these jobs. There's other ways to get onto the Central Committee. And then there's an Executive Committee that sort of makes, you know, more decisions. You can't have all of the people together all the time. Mm-hmm. So the Executive Committee, just like any kind of steering committee or whatever.
It's like a Russian nesting doll of committees.
Yeah, lots of committees. Don't say that, though.
This is, oh, fair enough.
This is a Reagan party. Yeah. So they had endorsed Andrew Hayes for the 75th Assembly District. Carl DeMaio was at the Central Committee. He stayed out of it, had nothing to do with that decision or that, you know, didn't oppose it, didn't whatever. And they supported Andrew Hayes. Andrew Hayes is a staffer for Senator Brian Jones. Seemed like kind of he was just picked to take the spot that Marie Waldron, this current assembly member for this district, was moving on, and he would take that spot. Now, Carl DeMaio looked at that and said, I can beat that guy, jumps into the race. This is Carl DeMaio, former city councilman of the city of San Diego, talk show host, insulter of me. He's
in our blog.
Yeah, he's not a huge fan, except when he wants to be of our work or needs us for something. But he's, you know, whatever. He's a very polarizing individual. There's a lot of people who like him, and there's a lot who do not. Anyway. He has he wants to, now he's going to go to the runoff. He did well in the primary.
Yeah, he and Hayes advanced to the general, right?
Right. Hayes barely made it through but got to the general, and now there's this epic sort of classic Republican standoff for this assembly seat. And Carl promises to reform the entire California Republican Party. I think there's some leaders in the Republican Party aren't exactly excited about that, but he's got this whole army of supporters ready to help him do it, right? So Paula Witzel's always been sort of, this is chairwoman of the party, has always been sort of a fan and an ally of DeMaio. Mm-hmm. And she comes, now that he's in this race and doing well, she comes to the party and announces, as chairman, I've decided that support, that endorsement was just for the primary. And so we're going to vote again on who to endorse, and I think it should be Carl.
And that kind of thing happens all the time, right? They just endorse for the primary. It's like a
nope,
you know, expiration date endorsement.
Well, no. As a matter of fact,
okay.
The endorsement from all everybody that can remember, they've always supported somebody through the primary and through the general.
Well, that sounds quite
unless
curious.
Unless something happens, right?
It'd be kind of weird to say you support somebody at the primary and then later say, we're not feeling you anymore, unless something crazy happened.
Well, as detractor Coronado Mayor Richard Bailey looked at that and said, look, it's a 2/3 vote to get an endorsement. You can't just decide one person that doesn't matter. Like, you want to have a 2/3 vote to rescind it. Let's do that. So she decides, okay, well, let's have a vote. The executive committee of this group decides to vote and doesn't go along with it. She's mad. She throws one of them off the executive committee. This is former city councilman Scott Sherman, city council, city of San Diego, kind of more moderate of this group. He is thrown off the executive committee because he doesn't support this effort to change the endorsement. She's flounder. She decides to call another meeting, get things going, trying to get this done, and she is now out. Out. So a little bit of intrigue, intra-party intrigue.
I do love the announcement. Had no mention of her being out. It was just like, newly elected chair, so-and-so. Yeah. You know, like, there was no, we're just not going to talk about that.
No, yeah, it's exactly.
If you're going through a scandal, there's no reason to address it.
I mean, I don't know.
No, to your point, I love this. You're exactly right. She said, in the new press release that came around tonight, the Republican Party of San Diego County reaffirmed its endorsement of Andrew Hayes as the county party's only official endorsed candidate in the 75th Assembly District. And then, next line, newly appointed chairman of the San Diego County Republican Party, Corey Gustafson, issued this statement, Andrew Hayes is the Republican Party's only endorsed candidate. It's like just repeats itself. But that line, newly appointed, was like, whoa.
Yeah. Just like casually slided in there. Paula is no longer
like, you think they'll notice?
Yeah.
Like, I love imagining how this is kind of like the political machinations version of that meme of a guy walking with his girlfriend and then, but he's like looking back at this other girl.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend's looking over at him like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
But it's with Witzel and DeMaio and Hayes.
Oh, that would be a good name.
In their place, yeah. So, but it seems like there were some other things that were attached to this endorsement, right? What can you explain this money situation?
Yeah, so apparently this was not all lost or not all a lost cause for DeMaio and his supporters. Mm-hmm. As part of the negotiations for all this, they got the party to agree not to do what is one of the most important functions of a party endorsement. So there's two benefits of getting a party endorsement. One is you get to say, I'm the official endorsed party candidate, right? And they can still get around that sometimes. Like DeMaio could say, like, I'm a Republican, but this guy gets to say, I'm the party's supported candidate. So that matters. But honestly, is it like that big a deal? Something.
But maybe for the normals who are not as engaged. And
but the real benefit is sort of two parts. One is you get to be included as like one of the people that the Republican Party supported in its list of who you should vote for if it ever puts those things out. But it has no money, remember now. So there aren't going to be a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And most people know that they're both Republicans running in that district. The real benefit would be that he can raise money to his campaign, but he could also tell donors to give money to the party, and the party could spread. He can coordinate with the party and say, like, you should reach out to your members in the district and communicate all of these things, and I'll save my money to do these other things. That's the true, like, core benefit of a party endorsement. And that's why the Democratic Party is having so many big fights about who's going to be on the Central Committee, because you get the endorsement of the party, and you get to access that power of communicating with Democrats in San Diego so that a candidate can use their own money to communicate with independents and people in the other parties, right?
So basically they affirmed their endorsement of Hayes while also kind of hobbling it.
Apparently they concluded at the same time that they would not do that they would not do the spreading and spending of money to help him in any way. And so that's a big win for DeMaio. He didn't flip the endorsement, but he got them to agree to that. So we'll see if that really matters in the long term. This is going to be just a brawl, And I think that you'll see some really interesting state involvement, state party officials, labor, the police hate DeMaio. They're going to spend against him. There's just a lot of this guy carries with him a lot of fans and detractors. Nobody has a mixed, nuanced view of it's either you're all in with this guy or you're not. And that's going to play out, and it'll be really interesting. I asked a bunch of Republicans if it parallels the Trump versus not Trump fight that's been going in the Republican Party for a long time in California.
Because DeMaio has kind of cast himself as a pretty Trumpy figure.
Both of them have.
Oh, really?
Hayes as well. Okay. Which will be interesting for both of them to dial back now as they try to get the independents and the few Democrats that are there.
Yeah, well, they kind of have to now.
Right. So that'll be fun to watch and be like go from wearing the cowboy hat to like a latte or something. I don't know.
A bicycle helmet. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that'll be interesting. But I asked everybody, is there a similar divide? Are like the Trumpies that line up behind DeMaio and the moderate, we don't need to let that guy define us thing, and will that line up? No, they said that there's no crossover that way. It's a fully just different DeMaio versus not DeMaio world. And
wow.
But I think it's really interesting because I think this is the first time I've seen the party establishment, aside from the initial endorsement, really like reject one of his moves. Mm-hmm. He does have an ace in the hole, though. He helped run a slate of candidates for the Central Committee. They haven't taken their offices yet. Mm. And I think like as they come in, DeMaio's going to have more party more support at the party level than he does now. So
could this endorsement, is this endorsement thing not dead? Could they change it yet?
I think there's a chance they could change it.
Wow.
When I heard you were doing a story about virtual learning, online learning.
Yeah.
Did
you have like Vietnam era flashbacks? Yeah. <It's> like punching the mirror. Like,
it was such a bad time.
Like Branda,
it's
or
like
what's
staring
the name?
Like, himself, splashing some water on
his
face.
Apocalypse Now
like,
moment.
Like the whole scene of like me trying to talk and do an interview, my voice carries, my wife's trying to do her work, and then she gets a text from the teacher saying like Xavier is not paying attention to his Zoom screen.
Oh,
like
God.
Like a 9-year-old can handle online learning and not look away from this stupid screen. It was nightmare. It was the worst time. He, you know, falls behind in a way. You know, actually we spent more time on his math. He gets back up. Anyway, it's just like, so I was like, okay, we're doing online
trauma.
Learning. But I think you got some pretty solid data here, and it's kind of alarming. What did you find out in this latest story about virtual learning cloud schools?
Mm-hmm. Ain't good.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the long and short of it. I mean, ultimately, it seems as if kids at virtual online schools are just not doing well, and especially compared to kids in in-person schools. And both at kind of virtual schools that were started by districts, you know, district-run schools, and at virtual charters, both of them are really struggling. But the people struggling the most are kids at fully virtual schools. And there are only a couple of those in the county, but they're all charters.
So let's start with, how do we define struggling? Like, what did you look at and how did you make that call?
Yeah. So, you know, every year at Voice of San Diego, we put out our Parents Guide to San Diego Schools. And one of the things that's been most exciting in that product is this metric that we created, the income versus test score metric.
With UC San Diego.
With UC San Diego, yes. And this metric kind of allows us to control for poverty, or just not even just poverty, but for income, so that we can see how much value a school is adding. It can be tough, right? Because poverty and income levels have such an impact on test scores. They're correlated so closely that it can be really hard to pull those things apart. You know, the more poverty in a school, the worse kids' test scores are. The higher income a school is, the higher the test scores are. And so pulling this apart, it allows us to not only see, kind of create a scale that gives us an idea of if a school that has a lot of poverty is doing as well as it should be, but also schools that very high income areas, if they're doing as well as they should be.
Right. So if you see somebody performing better than what might be sort of predicted by that arc, then you're like, well, what's going on there? There might be something special.
Exactly.
They're overperforming. If they're performing worse, you might be like, wow, like this isn't going well. And when you look at the virtual schools, the online schools, dark.
Yes. And, you know, online schools, they don't tend to have incredibly high levels of poverty. And so you would assume that they would probably do a little bit better than schools that do. That was just not the case though, right? So our metric, a score of 0, is basically baseline. Schools are exactly where you think they would be. Anything higher means they're doing better than you would expect. Anything lower means they're doing worse than you would expect.
Let's set a baseline too. So the one that did the best in this metric is the one you profiled, Edison Elementary, right?
Yes, that's the school.
And what was its number?
It was 90. So let me pull
something
that
90, right?
It was in the 90. 90s, essentially.
Okay, so that'll help us understand these negative numbers you're about to say. So if you have a negative number, maybe like negative 5, it's not going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But it gets into the 90s or something, 50s, you're working on a school that's really underperforming.
Yeah.
Even the sort of reset expectations of the metric.
Yes. Okay. So, you know, looking at this data, one of the first things that popped out was just how few of these schools were anywhere near the positive part of the scale, right? So of 26 virtual schools, 22 of them scored negatively on this metric. And then when you break down kind of schools by distinction, right, what I did was did an average of all of the schools' scores, but I weighted it to determine, you know, to take into account how many kids were at those schools.
Yeah.
So district-run schools that are primarily virtual scored a negative 55 on average, that weighted average. Primarily or fully virtual charter schools scored a negative 24. But fully virtual schools, all of which were charters, as I said, they scored on average a negative 71. There are about 712, 700 and something like that schools in the county. Very few of them, what is it? Like I said, 26 of them are virtual schools. Yet somehow the two lowest performing schools on this metric were both
of all 700 schools.
Of all 700 something schools were both virtual schools. One school had a negative 330 score on this metric, which is, you know, shocking.
So there was a couple of things to think about. Like one lady brought up, well, this was, I think, one of the leaders of the school or a school district.
Yeah.
Said, well,
yeah.
Look,
Gina Gaskell, executive director of Pivot Charter Schools.
Yeah. So she said, like, look, we're already serving because by nature, this is like a last place for a lot of kids who are struggling already. So, mm-hmm. of course, we're going to have bad numbers. What was that?
Yeah. So that was one thing that researchers told me as well. You know, many virtual schools, they kind of pitch themselves as these places that kids can go when they're falling behind. And that's exactly what, you know, Gaskell said her school specializes in, taking these kids who are struggling, trying to turn them around, and then getting them out the next year so they can go back to in-person schools. But researchers and research has shown that virtual schools just aren't really very good at that. You know, being online, doing school virtually, it doesn't allow for the degree of engagement that kids who are behind really need. What would really help is getting them into brick and mortar schools that offer more one-on-one instruction and stuff like that. But, you know, besides that, one thing that's important to note is just how much enrollment at virtual schools has increased, because no longer are they just places where you go for credit recovery, right? There are people actively choosing to send their kids to virtual schools because, I don't know, what one reason or another. And so they no longer are just these last resort kind of places. And that's especially true at you know, all across the line, but that enrollment increase is especially true at district schools, right? From 2018 to 2019 to last year, enrollment at district-run virtual schools increased by like 600%, which is a truly shocking increase that was kind of spurred by the fact that many of these districts created their new virtual schools to meet the demand of parents and students.
So some parents did not have Scott's experience.
Apparently not. Some parents seem to, have...
This was rad.
Yeah, just
keep with the Zoom.
Yeah. Some parents seem to have enjoyed their experience and decided to stick with virtual schooling. But it's also important to note now that many of those schools are kind of pumping the brakes and turning things back. You know, last year I did a lot of reporting on iHigh, which was San Diego Unified's virtual school. They closed the school to high schoolers and middle schoolers, and it would happen really abruptly, and many parents were super confused and couldn't figure out why it had happened. When the district eventually spoke to me and kind of explained their reasoning, it was because primarily of two things. The school was, for some reason that I still can't quite grasp, was very expensive to run. And the second one was that kids were really underperforming. They really were not... there were, I think, 70% of kids that weren't on track to graduate. I mean, these really shocking numbers, right? So that's one example. South Bay Union School District is another district that, I contacted them to try and get an idea of how, you know, the school was doing, why it had scored so low on our metric. And they said, hey, we can't really talk to you, but you should know that on Thursday, we're recommending that this school be closed, and our board of education is going to be voting.
So you were already reporting this story, and they're like, this school's not doing well. You call them, and they're like, oh yeah, by the way,
just FYI,
we're closing.
We're recommending that the board of education vote to close this.
Fascinating.
Were they recommending to close because they're not seeing a lot of success?
They couched it more as kind of enrollment trends. It seems like enrollment had declined in recent years, and that's kind of what they said. But at the same time, in the email, you know, an assistant superintendent was like, by the way, this school was identified as, you know, a school in need of comprehensive school improvement based on its low performance. But we're closing it because of enrollment.
Yeah. This is such an interesting thing. I remember back, you know, the online alternative to school was not necessarily, but in some ways, kind of a conservative or a reformer sort of approach before the pandemic. Was like, hey, we could do a lot teaching kids online. Yeah. Maybe we don't need all this brick and mortar expense and all that such. And then the pandemic happened and everything switched. the teachers unions and the teachers said, we can handle school online. Mm-hmm. Don't go back. Mm-hmm. And then the conservatives became the ones saying like, online school is not working. You got to go back.
Yeah.
And now the school districts that really embraced and tried to create these programs because they thought it might be a way to keep these kids involved, now they seem to be backing away from it.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting the way that politics around schools shift. I mean, so much of this online thing was distinctly charter based, right?
Yeah.
And those online schools that charters have run have a long track record of just kind of imploding because of massive scandal. I mean, you can think back to the A3 charter scandal that Will covered when he was education reporter. And so seeing it kind of become more embraced by districts was, I'm sure, very surprising and a sort of sign of the twisted up politics of the pandemic and the times that we're living in.
Yeah. You can see those numbers for yourself on Jacob's page at VOSD.org/Jacob with a K. That's VOSD.org/JAKOB. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD.
As I walked through the bowels of the sports arena, I was talking to one of my, you know, teammates.
During the soccer game.
What they're called.
Teammates. Co-players.
Yes, soccer.
Shout out to H.J. Preller. He asked when this arena would get taken down. I was like, oh, man.
Were you like buzzing that somebody asked you a question?
Yeah, but I don't know. I was like, wow, best case, I would say 5 years, maybe, because they say they want to build the new arena first and then take the old one down. So, So to get everything through, to get the approvals and all the financing done, I would imagine maybe best case 5 years, maybe 6, 7, that sort of thing. Okay. So this came up though. I got to do some radio about the latest of the buzz of the sports arena discussion. So do you remember we talked about the enhanced infrastructure financing districts?
How could we forget?
Yes.
So fun.
So when that was approved for the arena, let's talk about what that is real quick. Just a reminder, this is the city owns about 50 acres of land around the sports arena and underneath the sports arena. What the idea is that they've advanced is that they're going to draw a line around that and say, all the property taxes that are collected from here, that's the baseline. Mm-hmm. Anything new, the city is going to forego and not collect to its other places, and we'll keep it there. And so if you create a new sports arena, for example, you start paying property taxes on the sports arena, that will, instead of going to the rest of the city, it'll stay there, and you can use it to build infrastructure mm-hmm. for that whole project and the yeah. connections to the rest of the community and other things. So when that was approved by the city council, at least to continue investigating as an idea, I think there was this little panic that went through a group of people who support San Diego State University. So the boosters, as they might be called. Mm. And in particular, David Malcolm, who he's a close associate with Diana Bashour, the new naming, you know, the whose name is now on the field of Snapdragon Stadium, the Bashour Field. Mm. And so she and Malcolm and the JMI Sports, who controls like the sponsorships and stuff for sports at SDSU, mm-hmm. they all had worked on an idea to build an arena at the new site of the Snapdragon Stadium at the university stadium land in Mission Valley.
So sort of replacement of Viejas?
Yeah, the idea was they wanted to replace Viejas, put a new arena there, obviate the need for an arena in Midway. Remember, JMI Sports was part of the bidding group, one of the groups for the sports arena site, and they had proposed a much smaller new arena because they said this isn't the place for a big arena. Mm-hmm. And I think they might have had a different idea of where the real place should be. And I think it was in Mission Valley.
Mm.
And so I think this approval of the Enhanced Infrastructure Financing District sort of sent a panic through them that this idea that they'd been kind of working on and dreaming of, that there'd be an arena at Mission Valley, might be the beginning of the end of that idea. And there was this like blip of panic about that, right? Yeah. So
to be clear, I mean, there were some stories that came out. There was a La Prensa story.
Yeah, the La Prensa article was like, San Diego State is hiding details of a free arena that somebody wants to build on the Mission Valley land.
And what that story didn't mention was a story from 2 years previous that the UT had done about this exact plan. I mean, was the way it was framed in some of the discussion was that idea had kind of died, had it not?
Well, the idea is still there, and I think mm-hmm. the people who wanted to build it are still willing to talk about it. So the main group involved is called Oakview Group.
Mm-hmm.
They build arenas and, in fact, had done a deal that they would like to replicate in Austin. They'd done an Austin arena for the University of Texas,
uh-huh.
and basically they built it on their own time. They shared the revenues after that with the university and mm. eventually are going to just hand over the arena to the university. And they said, we could do that at your place.
Interesting.
And they were really excited about it. And if you think about it, if they build an arena there, they could get rid of the Viejas Arena and build student housing there or other research facilities there. And then they would have
or a third even newer arena.
Or more arenas.
Why not?
Just have a multiverse of arenas everywhere. So I think it makes sense as an idea, right? It was something. And they were kind of like hoping that eventually it would get there. But the university president, Adela De La Torre, has no interest in this at all.
Hmm.
She flew down to the Austin site. They would be on Kathy Bashour's dime on her private jet and at the request, apparently, of the university's athletic department to just check this out.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, like, it looks nice. I'm not interested in that. That we made a deal with the city of San Diego that this land should be set aside for an innovation district.
Mm.
And we have the stadium already next to it. We're going to pursue that innovation district. You might remember San Diego State's really trying to be like a top level research university. Yeah, and they believe that innovation district is a key to that or part of it.
So she's fine with keeping Viejas as it is.
Well, I think they all agree they need to maybe rebuild Viejas a little bit, maybe give it a little new coat of paint. Maybe a few more things, but They would rather do that than relocate it.
I mean, I will, just as somebody who likes to go to the basketball games, it is a nightmare getting in there. I'm not saying that Mission Valley would be better, but yeah.
Right. I mean, that's another argument. The Mission Valley Arena is right along the trolley line. Mm-hmm. The Midway one will not be. Now, they're going to try to work a lot on the connections to Old Town Transit Center, make it easier. Right now, you would not want to ever walk from the Old Town to the sports arena. That would be uncomfortable at best.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always say, like, if you're walking in Midway, something has gone wrong in your life.
Yeah, it's a pretty terrible place.
It's not a walkable.
I tried walking one time from the Target to the Staples.
Oh.
That was terrible.
Yeah, that's not good.
I was like, I should have just, like,
Had gone wrong in your life? You just chose that?
Well, I parked in Target and I was like, what's the point of going around all these crazy cars? Like, I could just walk there.
You learned quickly.
And that was
point.
Terrible. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I was a kid who went to a lot of shows at SoMa, so I did a fair amount of walking around Midway.
Right, right.
But I was going to a show at SoMa, so something had gone wrong with my life.
Yeah. Or you'd join the Marines, right? So there's the Marines have to walk from the
I thought you were saying that the Marines just were going to a lot of strip clubs down there, but
no, they do. They walk from there to sometimes all the way to OB.
Okay.
But you're either a Marine, a kid going to SoMa, or something's gone wrong with your life.
We're adding new options. I'm glad that we're expanding your mind.
There's a couple of other ways that could be happening. So I think they have that problem to solve. Like they're gonna put another arena. Yeah, there's already an arena there, but it's surrounded by parking. They get rid of all that parking, put up condos and apartments. Then, you know, they do have a challenge of getting people in and out there that they want to address, and partly with that infrastructure and financing district. And so I think this all kind of came to a head because the guys who want to put on the arena somewhere else have realized, like, this is their last shot to make that case. And it looks like I talked to the people at the university. They sent me a long statement saying, like, this is not going to happen. And I said, well, let's say it did and you did want it. Would you have to get a vote of the people? And they basically responded, no, we don't know actually the answer, because that's an irrelevant question, because we're not going to do it. Like, it's like they didn't even want to, like,
pretend.
Talk about that. I have a call later today with the San Diego city attorney, because I want to know, would you have to, because they voted to approve the sale of this land to the university based on this idea of what it would be.
Yeah.
So if they changed the plan for the university, would they have to get a new vote of the people? And I think that's an interesting question. I'm going to ask the city attorney that today, but again, it's irrelevant according to San Diego State. So
they just don't want to talk about it, huh?
So I basically just figured out a way to talk for 15 minutes about a story that nothing's happened anymore. That's all fake. But it sounded fun.
Yeah.
Related to that is the question of, is the new arena being built at Midway? And I didn't collect any information to indicate that they are not building one there. Jack McGorry, who's a member of the trustees of the California State University system, had said, like, hey, I think that there's some people concerned that there's a bait and switch happening at Midway, and that they're not going to follow through with that arena, and that it's going to thus be on us at the university to build it. That's what I think people are panicked about. But by the way, I support the mayor's plan to build an arena in Midway. And that's it. That's that story. It blew up. Might be just because these guys are worried about whether their idea is at the beginning of the end. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in San Diego as part of an organization that has a great newsletter every other Monday called the Environment Report. It's a mix of policy, natural occurrences, special insights from the Earth, Wind, and Fire reporter, Mackenzie herself. Check it out at vosd.org/environment. That's vosd.org/environment. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. Andrea Lopez-Villafana is our Managing Editor. Jacob McQuinney is our Education Reporter and the theme music composer. Nate Johns, our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.